working on some haikus. You know, this is just a little piece about the haiku. I wish to allude to the haiku. I think it needs to be extended, made less rigid. Some people take it too seriously altogether. I'm tired of the old haikus. I think it's time for new coups. All kinds of coups. Twi coups, boo coups, happy coups, and weepy coups, boo coups, pigeon coups. Coups with less than 17 syllables. Now that would be a coup. It's time for the haiku to branch out, not to hide in its own cocoon anymore, and will come out and advertise itself. There are millions of people who don't have a clue what a haiku is, and if they did, they would just poo-poo it. Which is my cue for more suggestions as to how to popularize the haiku and make it more well-known. It could become a world beater. We could have Donnelly's and Coo, or Murphy Brothers and Coo. We could have the Coo-Coo Clan. We could have cook curry classes in which people could learn about the ingredients of the form and how to cook them up. We could have baked coups and half-baked coups, though there are a lot of those around as it is. We already have cuckoo clocks. But why couldn't we simply have coup clocks with a haiku written on the side? Then we could even have a society of collectors of these clocks and call them the Coo Clocks Clan. Or, if that was in danger of being confused with anything else, just the Coo Clan, the Haiku Clan. This could be a society for lovers of the haiku who would agree to communicate with one another in sentences of exactly 17 syllables. They would not be allowed to speak except in haikus on pain of excommunication from the Coo Clocks Clan.
Well done, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Next up, we have somebody who hasn't been here for ages. He was our guest last year's concert night, Fergus Custard. Welcome, Fergus.
Thank you very much. This is a piece about. You know, sometimes somebody will be talking to you and the next thing is they mispronounce a word and you misinterpret what they say, and as a result of that you go off and do something very stupid and embarrassing. So this is called Proper Pronunciation is Important. Proper pronunciation is important in the world of poetry. But for the purposes of avoiding misunderstanding, proper pronunciation is also important in the everyday world, everyday, for you and me. Recently, I received a last-minute invitation over the telephone to what I mistakenly believed to be was a poultry festival. So I quickly hurried along with a Rhode Island grape under my arm, as you do. Seamus Heaney met me, and after he read my name tag, he said, "Fergus, what's with the Rhode Island Grape?" "Well, Seamus," I said. "I didn't want to be coming along to the festival empty-handed, hence the Rhode Island Grape. Do you have a keen interest in poultry yourself, Seamus?" I said. "What?" he said. "Do you have a keen interest in poultry yourself, Seamus?" I said, repeating myself. "What?" he said, repeating himself. From the confused, bemused look on his face, I deduced that Seamus was a newcomer to the Irish poultry scene. I deduced he had never been to a poultry festival before. "Don't worry your head, Seamus," I said. "You don't have to feel embarrassed or ashamed just because you haven't got a bull's notion about poultry. Believe you me," I said, "most people here are just like you. They haven't got a clue about poultry. They're only pretending that they do. You see, Seamus, in the Irish poultry world, is absolutely full of bluffers and chancers." Seamus looked at me as if I had two heads. "What?" he said. "Now, Seamus," I said, "you've got to stop saying what. People will start to think that you're stupid, and I'm sure you're not. Instead of saying what, try saying, that's interesting. Don't worry, Seamus, it doesn't mean anything. In fact, it doesn't mean anything. It could mean that's interesting in a good way, or it could mean that's interesting in a not so good way. But either way, Seamus, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Believe you me, it's better to say that's interesting than to say what. You see, Seamus, it's not what you know, it's what you pretend that you know. You don't have to walk the walk. All you have to do is pretend to talk the talk. You see, Seamus, I know that you know that you don't know the first thing about poetry, but you don't have to let the whole world know. In fact, what you need to do is pretend that you do know. And in that way, the Irish poetry world will show you respect in respect of what you know, even though you know, and I know both know, that you haven't got a fool's notion about poetry. Do you follow me, Seamus? What? Now listen, Seamus. I'll give you a few tips, okay? A beard and leather patches will, of course, earn your respect. So will a wife with a double-barreled name. Never, ever feel ashamed about dropping names. And remember, Seamus, in the Irish poetry world, bluffing and bullshitting is the name of the game. You see, Seamus, if you can't blind them with brilliance, just baffle them with bullshit. And that, Seamus, in a nutshell, is about it. Seamus looked at me and I could see that he was still having a little difficulty understanding me. What? He said. Ah, Seamus, I said, listen, let's try something else here. Take hold of my Rhode Island ring. Stick him in under your arm. That way you won't stand out like a sore thumb. It'll help you look more the part. It won't fool everybody, Seamus, but at least it's a start. And I want you to memorise this phrase. The Rhode Island Red Rooster is big and strong, but believe it or not, pound for pound, you can't beat the bantam cock. Now, Seamus, I know that's not exactly a conversation stopper, but that phrase can very easily help you to bluff your way out of a tight spot, and it sure as hell beats the crap out of saying what. I hope that this slightly more robust approach to Seamus' education might help to deliver the short, sharp shock that I believe was necessary to unblock Seamus' antipathy towards poetry, but I'm afraid not. What? Ah, Seamus, for flip's sake, I said, get a grip. This is not rocket science we're talking about. We're talking about poetry. In fact, we're not even talking about poetry. We're talking about talking about poetry. How difficult could that be? Listen, Seamus, relax. Loosen up. Let you and me go get a cup of tea. We'll sit down and I'll give you the full lowdown about the Irish poetry scene. I will give you the inside story about Irish poetry. I will take you under my wing, so to speak. And in no time at all, I'll have you talking like a real poetry geek. I'm sorry, said Seamus, looking at his watch. I can't. I've got to give a talk. You've got to give a talk, he said. Yes, he said. I am the keynote speaker. Now it was my turn. What? You are the keynote speaker at a poetry festival. Even though you haven't got a bull's notion about poetry, you're giving the keynote address. Seamus, I'm impressed. You're the man, Seamus. In fact, I'm more than impressed. I've met bullshitters, but you're up there with the very best, Seamus. I've met bluffers and chancers by the score. But I've never met an operator as cool as you before. Respect, Seamus, I said. Respect. And by the way, please accept my apology for the earlier misunderstanding. I didn't realise, Seamus, that I was standing in the presence of greatness. What can I say, Seamus? I am speechless. With my Rhode Island red still tucked in under his arm, Seamus turned to make his way towards the podium to give the keynote address to a festival hall packed with what I still believe to be poultry enthusiasts. I shook his hand and I said, Seamus, just before you go, I want to let you know that you are and always will be my all-time hero. Thank you.
Before I go, just a blatant plug, I'm going to be in the Roundly on Thursday night, back from Tipperary again. I was just down here for the night kissing my mother, and if any of you are around upstairs on Thursday night, I welcome your support. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Barry. Next up we have our five-word champion, Micheál.
This one's called Columbo Jumbo. It said Columbus forms America. Others would argue it was St. Brendan of the Emerald Isle. But the wise man knows it was never last to be formed in the first place. It's hardly the kind of thing you hide under a rock or stick in behind a ditch. Maybe the Native Americans could argue that it was indeed them who discovered Columbus.
Unfortunately for them. Next up, Colin Scully.
I normally read poems, but tonight I'm just for changing reading a short story. It's very short. It's called A Little Bit of Hard Work. There was a glazed look on Gordon's face as he left the locker room for the last time. He stopped briefly to nod to the security man before swiping out. 33 by 9 weeks per year. That makes 207 by 900. That makes 186,300 euro. The numbers rolled through his mind. The sun was shining as he walked for the last time towards the car park. He smiled at Jerry, the maintenance man, coming in on his last shift. Last one, Jerry. We hit the jackpot, boy. We did. We found a way to be a leader. They laughed at their mockery of the company slogan. We took him to the cleaners, Gordon thought, in the brightness of the evening. For the first time in years, he seemed to hear the birds singing. 23.5 years standard time, he thought. Plus 1,500 hours overtime in the last 3 years on the run-up to the closure. That bolstered his package by 28%. The wife could have her holidays now. The Caribbean cruise she had been on going on with. Then there was the 1,200 shares he'd always taken in options. Safely secured and ready for a rainy day. That was ideal pension material. But of course then there was the pension as well. That was worth 50% of his full wages from 65. And if he wanted, he could start taking it early at a reduced rate from next year. Or maybe he would take the lump sum tax-free. He could pay off the 80,000 mortgage on the Budapest apartment. He must go there to see it, maybe at Christmas. Someone said the Christmas markets were fantastic. He slid into his car and rolled down the window to talk to Gagan, the liar. Well, Gagan, old pal, we're escaping from the 4-9 mouse trap. We are. You know I'll miss it. You certainly dug the goal, I know who you could. She won't know what to do with yourself now. Langer, Gordon thought as he drove away. He'd find plenty to do. He planned to take up art again. He still had to open that new set his son had bought him. It was on top of the dresser at home. When did he give it to him again? When he'd got his first payback from O'Driscoll's. My God, that must be 6 years ago. Looked like a fine kit. Charcoals and horsehair brushes and vellum sheets. His heart began to beat slower. He tugged at his chest. His vision grew quite foggy. What was that pain coming again for? That tingling down his arm and the dull feeling on his neck. He pulled into the side abruptly. He could just make out Gagan at the window banging. Then he slumped to his side and was gone.
Okay, the manager is going to go for another 10 minutes, so we can get everyone in, hopefully. There's 5 people left, a couple of minutes each, right, please. Next up, Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Paul. She's called Lightning Wires. Order is crumbling. Far, far away, put the embryo to the candle light and watch it tremble. Gestating from a worse sin into a new extreme that is not yet dangerous, crushing yet well the high aped, the subtle silent privacy of fruition and tears, where on twilight's apex it actually kissed you, yanking wishes from troubled sleep, recurring a dream to its newfound success.
Next we have Magdalena Color.
I have something short as well. The stone is fresh. The trees with their black arteries pump up the night prayers into the blue, which is sucking the fears like milk. The insatiable toddler, only stupid look, up with hope, taking the dog for a walk, from your own and somebody else's greetings. It's perhaps better to look up than down. What was it then for to have us straightened up?
Next, we have Finn Barthinger.
Yes is a lift and left. Don't know about no. Red sky to the brain. Cloudy grey cotton wool is fine too. No negative can be a downer. No positive can be a liberator. Yes for the future. Yes for now. Yes for my mother. Yes for the universe. Yes for love. Yes for need on the radio. Yes for today, 28th to 3rd 11. Yes for his broken spirit. Yes for his courage to return. Yes for me, for my thoughts.
You can borrow just two people left. Then we have Claire McManus.
Called Sunday afternoon. The sort of voices come in and out of this, so don't have to throw you. That Sunday afternoon, somebody's golden Labrador retriever with a brown collar was jumping up at the window in the kitchen, trying to eat a blue bottle. The dog would step back, growling, head lowered, then pounce at the window open mouth with his paws up on the low sill, and snatch sideways at the fly buzzing and banging off the glass. Music was coming from the front bar, and the potatoes were boiling on the back ring. Joe Galvin was standing at the cooker warming a bowron with a cigarette dangling from his mouth. He wore a black leather waistcoat, black beard and black glasses. He had moved the carrots off to one side to warm the goatskin on a front ring. He held the bowron in one hand and rubbed the smooth skin in a circular motion with the other. He was leaning back and squinting to avoid the smoke, breathing through the corner of his mouth, and blowing the smoke away from his eyes with forced air from flared nostrils. The frustrated Labrador barked up at the fly. Spews of steam lifted and dropped the lid off the potatoes. Steam was condensing on the window. The bar was packed. In the bar, the musician sat under the window and banged out the mason's apron, a table covered with full and empty glasses in front of them. Ashtrays overflowed, and a fog of smoke clung to the ceiling. Two brothers and the Protestant stood with elbows on the high counter at one end, their usual spot. The brother with the waistcoat and the hat had left in Rupert during the week. An old man with black-rimmed glasses and a black coat sat on a high stool with his back to the wall drinking whiskey at the other end, his usual spot. He left mass early to be the first in. In between, heads and hands clamoured for stout and chatted and shouted over the music. John Mulvey stood pressed with his back to the door, gripping his pint tight to his chest. The circus man was itching to sing, and the tinker with the cravat and the polio limp waited for his turn to play the tin whistle. Behind the bar, pounds were taken, the till rang and change was returned. Glasses were plashed and washed in cold water on the spot and reused. Pints were lined up in a row, ready for the heads to be put on them, and steam rose from the boiling kettle for the awkward bastard at the hatch that wanted a hot whiskey. It's the middle of June. It's for herself, she's not a 100. That old summer cold is hard shook. Jesus wept. Empty glasses clinked as they were collected by handfuls, and full bottles sighed as their caps were prized off. The optics gurgled, and a blue beer cooler beneath the counter on the beer crate and a tangle of pipes hung to the demand. An old laundry basket filled steadily with empty bottles that clinked as they were dropped in on top of other. The old man goaded his son-in-law with round cheeks to sing, and the son-in-law started to sing a love song.
As we gather in the chapel here, in old Kilmingham jail, I think about these past few weeks, oh, will they say we failed?
People jostled and stretched and turned to see the singer, and those who didn't or were too short waited patiently listening. And the volume of the chatter dropped, and there was the sound of someone slowly gulping their first fresh mouthfuls.
From our school days they have told us we must yearn for liberty, yet all I want in this dark place is to have you here with me.
Someone gave out a scolding shh to kill the final mumbles of intense conversation of the cheek-to-cheek brothers discussing the merits of a mirror they wanted to buy. They both chuckled the same way and went beefy red behind their pints. The glass washing and till ringing stopped, and pints were sucked quietly, or not sucked at all, in the sacred silence.
Oh, grace, just hold me in your arms and let this moment linger. will take me out at dawn, and I will die. With all my love I place this wedding ring upon your finger. There won't be time to share our love, for we must say goodbye.
John Mulby straightened himself, lowered his pint, closed his eyes, put out his chest, and his neck tingled as the singer's voice lowered its insertion.
Now I know it's hard for you, my love, to ever understand the love I bear for these brave men, my love for this dear land.
Others blew slowly upward long drafts of smoke and vacantly watched as it swirled and began to fray. Some looked studiously downward or took extra long to crush out her soul a cigarette butt, and some just picked an imaginary spot on the ceiling and stood savouring every word. And in the silence, the boy's mother sneaked away to check on the roast, the marifat peas, the potatoes and the carrots. The Bowron player never put the carrots back and they were only half done. That bollocks and his effing Bowron. The love song wafted into the kitchen.
Oh, when Polly called me to a side down in the GPO, I had to leave my own sick bed, to him I had to go.
His mother continued prodding the roast with a big timber-handled fork, and the smell escaped from the oven, and the big useless lug of a Labrador salivated at her shoulder. In the bar, in the silence of the sound, the stout suppers could get the smell of lamb being roasted. Then there was a loud cheer and clap as the man with the round cheeks closed his eyes and jerked his head to beat time and to finish with all he could muster.
There won't be time to share our love, for we must say goodbye.
He then reached for his pint and his father-in-law wiped under his glasses and blew his nose loudly with a loose handkerchief that he had pulled by one corner from his top coat pocket. The brother with the hat went to bless himself, and the musicians under the window burst forth once more to hoops and cheers and another applause, and the till rang and pints were gulped. Then Guard Ryan in full uniform appeared in the door glaring at the musicians to stop, but they cut straight into another faster tune and a loud cheer went up. That's the gangly fucker, that one, the head on him and an eye on him like a goat eating cabbage. Ryan stood in the doorway until everyone drank up and left. Thank you.
Thank you, Connor, and to end the night, whoever, then Alfred.
I like the way you launch the microphone, so it's a great help. This is a piece of doggerel about Irish poets and Irish poetry, not poetry, this time poetry as it happens. Willie was away with the fairies, and Seamus, he petered the bog. Nuala had a thing about mermaids, and O'Reargyne, he argued with God. Montague ploughed up the rough field, and stitched where he could never sow. Kennedy loved his dark fathers, and cropped what he could never mow. With Deeroyne, he whored for an island, an idyll of peace and of truth, while Cavan, a stony grey manor and soil, bungled the balls of his youth. The smithy of poetry is madness, it is forged by badness of time, but Durkin proved beyond name the horse-clopping clanging of rhyme. He also commented with gusto on a regular diurnal news and gave the bishops of Ireland a dose of the Drimley blues. Then Clark, the Austin guy, who never ever attempted to please, was aware that the house of the planter was forever surrounded by fees. Although Austin, he was not related to that other much TV wench whose novels, no matter how you read them, leave its distinctly pernicious stench. Especially if you value equality and some kind of justice in life above the fact that a man with some property is always in need of a wife. Mark Twain, a man of much sense but of growing intellectual girth, averred in his penultimate letter that she'd have been better strangled at birth. Billy Ramsey complicates pleasures which should simply end in a high, but the pleasures we never could treasure, we left them behind in Shanghai. Pat Cottery always makes music inside of his perplex skin, and firkins of butter or winds on the wind were definitely not singing for him. Paul Casey, he wanders with wonder, kissing the purple mouth of the tastes of the grape that we must ever taste in this desiccated land of the drought.
this Cummings guy up from down Belfast, he sings of the man in the moon, and all of you out there want me to finish and rhyme with June or noon or tune or coon or moon or zoom, but fuck it, I won't.